stay on, you know, and go on mute or whatever.
This conference will now be recorded.
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the meeting to order. I'd like to start with doing a roll call. When I call your name, if you could just say present or somehow indicate that you're on the line. So, and the meeting is being recorded. I'm Peter Lisi. Do we have Julie Savino?
Present.
Ben Barnes?
Present.
Thank you. Marty Budd?
Here.
Andrew Foster?
Present.
Daryl Hill? Daryl Hill? Okay. Steve Kittowitz?
Present.
Okay. Now I'd like to go down to some of the, see, Chief of Staff, Denise Aguilera?
Present.
Deb Galley?
Here.
Josh Herluck?
Present.
Carly Levin?
Present.
Cynthia Peoples?
Present.
Shannon Reynolds?
Present.
Natalia Rosio?
Present.
Kara Stewart?
Present.
Is there anyone else from Chifa or Chesla on the call?
It's Jeanette Weldon, I'm on.
I'm sorry, Jeanette.
Sorry about that.
Boss!
I apologize. I'm looking down a list and I'm sorry. Okay, and guests, do we have Judith Blank?
Yes, present.
Thank you. Tim Webb?
Present.
Is Joe Santoro on the line?
Present.
Is there anyone else, non-Chifa, non-Chesla individuals on the line? If so, please identify yourself.
Yes, this is Jeff Wagner from RBC Capital Markets. Good morning.
Thank you.
This is Lou DeLuca, Financial Literacy, Southern Connecticut State University.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Hearing none, we'll go to first item of business and the approval of
Peter,
the market.
I noticed that Daryl has joined.
Daryl, are you on?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. First item of business, approving the minutes for the March 24th meeting. Is there a motion to accept?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
We've got a motion and a second to approve the minutes of March 24th. Is there any discussion? Are there any corrections, edits, any comments on the minutes? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Okay.
And this is Daryl. This is Daryl. I'll abstain as I was not in attendance at that meeting.
Okay. We have one abstention.
Andrew Foster, I'm also abstaining. I was not present.
Two abstentions. All right. Thank you. All right, Jeanette, let's, we can move into the executive director's report.
Yes. Let me start by mentioning that Lou DeLuca, who is on the call, is the most recent member of the Chesla Advisory Committee. So just wanted to acknowledge Lou and thank him for attending. With regard to authority update, first, I do just want to mention that we are continuing to work remotely. And that, you know, everything has been functioning well in a remote mode, and all of our vendors also are successfully working remotely. So, you know, we're continuing, you know, we'll be reevaluating the status of things in the next week or so. But at this point, certainly, you know, all indications are that we're going to continue to work remotely in the near term. then I wanted to turn to, for the rest of my commentary, to the strategic plan status report, which was included in the board package. And just wanted to quickly go through the items that are specific to CHESLA. And so if you recall, the chief and CHESLA put together a combined strategic plan. It's a three-year plan, so fiscal 20 is the second year of the plan. So Deb, if you can just go down, advance it a couple of pages. These are the goals. It goes pillar by pillar of the strategic plan, and it starts with the goals that we had and then what we actually achieved. So, and then new goals for fiscal 21. So with the first pillar being collaboration, you'll see we did a lot of outreach this year to the legislature and also to the administration. And we, one of the things that we crafted, which was an interesting approach that we had not used before, we did do a joint presentation. We developed a joint presentation of CHIFA and CHESLA workforce development initiatives that we presented to the governor's chief operating officer, the state treasurer, and the commissioner of DECD. And that was speaking from a CHESLA perspective. It was speaking a lot about the scholarship programs and some of the things that we've adapted to make them specific to certificate programs, as well as the REFI CT product and the in-school program. But a lot of other, generally a lot of outreach was done with regard to the co-chairs of the higher ed committee. And so lots of information was provided, and obviously I'm sure everyone is aware at this point, the legislative agenda was pretty much, you know, has been derailed. So, you know, we'll be starting things up again for the next session. We also established a nice collaboration with the Department of Education this year. And Josh, do you want to comment on some of what's been done there?
Yeah, sure. So, Jeanette and I did do a presentation in front of some Department of Education stakeholders at a commissioner's roundtable led by Commissioner Cardona. Shannon and Natalia also came up with a great idea to develop a video presentation on the financial aid basics and paying for college. They presented that at a couple of high schools before the pandemic hit. The pandemic obviously altered those plans. So I worked with Shannon and Natalia. They recorded a virtual presentation that we then provided to the Department of Education to distribute to all high school contacts throughout the state.
And this collaboration is significant, obviously, because it's the Department of Ed is helping CHESLA to increase awareness of what we offer within the public schools of the state. And then you'll see there in the fiscal 21 goals, the specific to CHESLA, a couple of meetings ago, we mentioned this collaboration that we're working on with RISLA with regard to building some volume for the REFI product. So that's a goal going forward. So moving on to the next pillar. So going, I believe it's page 14, if you want to go to page 14, Deb. This one, economic and workforce development for the public good. Again, this is overlaps somewhat with some of the collaboration activity, but it is an area where both CHIFA and CHESLA had some impact. And I think the CHESLA items we pretty much referenced already with regard to the scholarship program and trying to focus on bringing in some those pursuing certificates. But it also was complemented nicely by some workforce grants that were made on the CHIFA side. In the goals going forward, you'll see that we want to, you know, continue those combined activities. And then also there's reference to a CHESLA economic impact study in fiscal 21. Moving on to the next pillar, which is technology. And again, you know, most notably, I think, with technology is the fact that we're successfully working remotely. And that a lot of the credit for that goes to the chief IT staff, who was very instrumental making sure that everyone's connections were up and running, and also the fact that we really had the platform already established because it's a remote model that we use during inclement weather. So it's really served us well, both CHIPA and CHESLA. And significant also for CHESLA were the technology upgrades associated with the new originator and servicer. So Josh, you want to touch on that?
Sure. So, you know, if you all recall, historically, CHESLA had required wet sign promissory notes that made for a very outdated process. At the very end of our contract with First Mark, we did implement e-sign promissory notes. But the transition to Campus Door as originator has provided a much smoother process. Applications are being approved quicker. And the certification for the e-sign promissory notes and tracking of the integrity of the document are improved as well. We also transitioned the servicer to University Accounting Service, which they're better suited, you know, than First Mark was from a technology aspect, from a portal standpoint. And then lastly, we implemented the portal for the scholarship program, the first year of the scholarship program, in which applicants were applying directly to CHESLA. Applicants were mailing in documents through postal mail. The transition to an online secure application portal worked out extremely well this fiscal year and was also extremely timely due to the pandemic that hit.
Josh, to what extent, we've heard about the Campus Door transition, but yeah, I don't think we've heard about the UAS transition. How is that going? Have there been any problems and so forth?
So I would say it certainly hasn't been 100% smooth. I think anytime you transition a loan portfolio of close to $135 million, I think there are going to be speed bumps. But I think we're at a point now where you know, we're pretty much fully past those speed bumps, and we look forward to a successful relationship moving forward. To be honest, if I had to grade the transition from a servicer standpoint, I'd probably give it a C. You know, I don't think it was great by any means. I also think it could have been a lot worse. So I would say it was about average. But I think those issues are basically in the rearview mirror.
And how would you grade, as long as you're grading Campus Door transition?
Campus Door, I give it an A or an A plus. There's been really no issues there. It's just been, you know, great improvement from a First Mark standpoint. So yeah, Campus Door A plus. But keep in mind that from an originator standpoint, you're not really transitioning. You know, you're not converting a portfolio or converting documents, etc. You know, they're just purely picking up the new application. So I think Campus Door, you know, A or an A plus.
Thank you.
No problem.
And then with regard to the fiscal 21 goals at the bottom there, you'll see a couple of things relating to Cheswell. One is a new accounting system, which is being implemented on the CHIFA side, but also, you know, Cheswell uses CHIFA accounting. But also you'll notice the first item trying to improve ADA compliance for the Cheswell website. ADA compliance for websites is, you know, it is an area of focus, and I think it's particularly relevant if people are using, you know, looking at the website on their phone. There are all sorts of things, you know, associated with how does someone who is, you know, if you're physically impaired and you have to swipe a certain way, what happens if the person's unable to, you know, execute that? So those are some of the things that are part of ADA compliance. So moving on to the next pillar, which is innovation. And I think some of the most significant innovation was achieved in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. So there were some CHIFA initiatives, but on the Cheswell side, certainly student loans were a focal point from an economic perspective. So Josh, do you just want to touch on some of the additional support that we implemented?
Sure. So, you know, I think we were able to adapt quickly due to the pandemic and help out our borrowers where we could. We implemented a natural disaster forbearance that we obviously had in our program manual. All in-school borrowers were notified via email of that natural disaster forbearance being available. That was available in 3-month increments by a borrower calling into the servicer and basically indicating that they had a hardship due to the pandemic. Any additional 3 months beyond that would need to be approved directly by Cheswell. We also suspended existing collection efforts and stopped sending borrowers to collection as of March 13th. We also suspended the state tax refund intercepts that we received, and that was halted starting on March 23rd, and that will continue through the end of September. So we felt like, you know, with the restrictions we have from a cash flow standpoint, we still feel like we were able to help out our borrowers in light of the pandemic.
Right. So all of these, I was just going to mention, all of these things were done within the context of, you know, what will be the impact on the cash flows, because we have to make sure we can pay debt service on the bond.
Mm-hmm. Josh, this is Peter. Did Cheswell get any or many direct appeals with regard to hardship, forbearance, hardship?
Wait, can you repeat that?
You said that there was an initial three-month grace period, and then if a borrower needed additional time, they could contact you directly for the hardship. Did you get many appeals on that?
No, I believe off the top of my head, maybe one handful or two handfuls. It's been very limited in terms of borrowers seeking relief, but beyond the 3 months.
Yeah, that was my question. Beyond the 3 months, and you haven't had many then?
Nope. Very
little. All right. Thank you.
No problem.
And then just moving on to the employer outreach and what we're doing with RISLA. So just to refresh people on what that collaboration is, RISLA, which is actually a much larger organization than Cheswell, they actually do their own servicing and origination internally, so they have a large staff. And they also have a staff that does a lot of financial counseling and out in various parts of the state. They have also developed an employer portal to sort of provide a back office function for employers who want to pay down the loans of their employees. So it's a way for, you know, the employer to keep track, to get the money to the servicer, for the employee to be able to go on and see, you know, what's been paid, et cetera. So it's really combining that RISLA portal, which is still a RISLA driven portal, but we will be kind of jointly approaching some Connecticut employers so that we can educate the Connecticut employers on the availability of the tax credit that is out there for a pay down of CHESL refi loans on behalf of employees. And so while we're emphasizing that and trying to market CHESL refi program, we will be augmenting that or giving people the option. You know, people will also be able to say, oh, and I would like to also make use of this RISLA product, of this pay down infrastructure to facilitate what I'm trying to do for my employees. So that's the basics of that collaboration, but we think it will help us to grow the volume of our refi program. So moving on to the last pillar, which is public engagement and accountability. The new branding and logos that were rolled out for both CHEFA and CHESLA. And then certainly on the accountability side, you know, there's always ongoing audit activity for all of the organizations, clean audit for fiscal 19 from the independent auditors. And so, you know, those types of activities obviously will continue. So that is the update on the strategic plan status, and fiscal 21 will be the last year of the three-year plan. So as the year goes on, we'll be gearing up for the next period, you know, for a new strategic plan for the next three-year period. Are there any other questions?
Yes, Jeanette. Should the board in any way affirmatively improve your strategic plan for 2021, or at least accept it, or should the minutes show that we reviewed it and, you know, approved it or recommended it or something like that?
Well, I think that's covered because the strategic plan was actually, the three-year strategic plan was presented going back in connection with fiscal 19, which was the first year of it. So this is just a status report on a plan that has already been adopted by the board.
Well, there have been no changes. I mean, to me, I don't know that we knew about RISLA, for instance, when it was adopted. Maybe we did, and it's my failure of memory.
Well, some of these things are activities that are associated with the broader pillars of the plan, so it's not that what was adopted was necessarily the exhaustive list of all activities. So you're correct, RISLA was not in there, but previously I had brought that to the board's attention. I mean, I'm not thinking it needs a board vote.
Well, at least the minutes should show that it was reviewed and discussed by the board.
Yeah, I'll show that in a minute.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. Okay.
So with that, we'll move on. I think, Josh, are you giving the rest of the executive director's report?
Well, I'll give we have a few sections here in our executive director's report, but I'll give the portfolio update. So I will start with page 21 or of the board package, which is the portfolio fact sheet. Really what I wanted to touch on here was you know, on the in-school program, our net default rate continues to stay low at 2.05%. On the refi side, our net default rate is 1.46%, and specifically 1.02% of a net default rate for refi with loans pertaining to the bonds of the 2019 resolution. So good news there. Continue to see low default levels. I will then skip forward to page 23 of the package. Really what I wanted to touch on this page is the income tax intercepts graph. You'll see the tax intercepts received for fiscal 20 is very low at about 13,000. We stopped receiving the defaulted borrower state tax refunds as of March 23rd. Moving forward to page 24, the loan disbursement data. For the third quarter, the Chesil In-School Loan Program disbursed $12.2 million. The funds were comprised of $5.9 million dispersed to students attending Canadian institutions and $6.3 million dispersed to students attending non-Connecticut institutions. Disbursements made in fiscal year 2020 are mainly associated with a 5.15% fixed rate. Some disbursements had been previously committed at the prior 4.95% rate. Through quarter three in total, fiscal year 20 for the in-school program is about $400,000 behind the pace of through quarter three of fiscal 19. I think some of that, you know, could be due to the pandemic, but I think as you can see with the total gross originations over the last 5 years, we're still set up to have a strong fiscal year 20 for the in-school program. Moving forward to page 25, we have some market segment data here from loans originated with Campus Door for the third quarter. I would also like to note, if you total up some of those numbers and you notice they're significantly lower than the total disbursements for the third quarter that I just indicated, keep in mind that this segment data is only for Campus Door loans. A large number of disbursements in the third quarter, second disbursements from First Mortgage loans. So this market segment data is applications and loans through Campus Door for the third quarter. So the disbursement amount by state, you know, most of our disbursements are for Connecticut residents. The disbursements by co-borrower income, the co-borrower income, the prominent range is essentially 50K to 150,000. Moving forward to page 26, we have top 15 by town level, the top five by county, the top three continue to remain pretty much the same, New Haven, Hartford, and Fairfield County. At the bottom of page 26, and I would like to note here, for the school information here, this is including loans originated with Firstmark and Campus Door. So this is thus far from the start of the fiscal year. The top three schools continue to maintain a status quo. Sacred Heart, UConn, and Quinnipiac. Sacred Heart is in the top spot by a fairly large margin. Any questions before I move on? Okay, hearing none. Page 27 in the package. This is a comparison of our 2019 disbursements for the in-school program compared to the cash flow assumptions. The disbursements are about $1.1 million ahead of the cash flow assumptions through May. So we're in good shape from that standpoint. Moving on to page 28. This is the 2019 A refi CT loan comparison to cash flow assumptions. Through May, we're about $130,000 behind the assumptions. I don't think it's the end of the world. It could have certainly been worse because you can rarely prepare for a pandemic. I would also know, you know, there's no issue from a cash flow standpoint or a debt service standpoint. Our debt service payments in November and May utilized a capitalized interest account. First principal payment is not until November 15th of 2021. With these refi bonds, we're paying about $100,000 in interest in May and June, and we currently have about $500,000 in the 2019 revenue account. So all in all, while
I take it the refi bond account, we seeded it with a lot of refi loans that we had previously made. So there should be a lot of equity to protect that refi bond. Is that not correct?
There is some, but remember the $7 million that we contributed of refi loans, that was, I believe it was split between 2019A and 2019B to where their revenue was flowing. So I don't have the exact breakdown off the top of my head. I don't know. Carly, can you add any further detail to that?
I believe it was about $2 million that went to the 2019 A, and about the remainder, about $5 million, had gone to the 2019 B. So there is a large chunk of loan revenue that is coming into those two accounts.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Thank you.
Okay, so any further questions?
Sure, this is Daryl. As I look at slide 28, the way you laid it out with the difference to cash flow at the far right, I'd be interested in seeing a cumulative running total to see if, given the ups and downs compared to the assumption, if there's any month that we're actually negative, or if we've always got sufficient monies to carry us through each month. I do see at the very bottom right the negative 128, which I would assume showing that May 20, $208,000, there was a positive balance, but that'd be helpful to have a better feel for the month-to-months.
Okay, I will note that moving forward.
Thank you.
Okay, so moving on, page 29, we have our refi CT loan disbursement data through quarter three of fiscal 20. The refi program has disbursed about $2 million. That's about $400,000. Behind the page, step four through quarter three of fiscal 19. There was significant impact here due to the pandemic, with federal loans offering 0% interest rates through September. Basically, the refi CT volume dissipated. I think, in quarter four, which obviously isn't reflected here, but the refi disbursements in quarter four have been pretty much negligible. Moving forward to page 30, we get into the refi CT analysis. You will note that there's basically a 50-50 split in terms of schools the borrowers attended. I would also like to point out that the top school of loans we're refinancing is UConn, who we annually have difficulty getting added to the preferred lender list. We continue to try to make strides in that regard, and we're hopeful when they send out their next RFI for the preferred lender list that we will have a good opportunity. I believe their next RFI will be going out sometime in the fall.
Josh, you know, you talked elsewhere about all the marketing effort. To what extent do you market the refi program when you go around, and how much attention do we pay in marketing to the refi program?
We pay a good amount of attention. Obviously, many events we attend, like college fairs, that's primarily the in-school program. But any events we attend, we make sure to bring refi information. Refi information has been popular at the Money Conference for Women that's annually held at the Convention Center. In terms of a marketing spend, I don't have the exact refi number off the top of my head, but we do essentially once we reach October and November, from a TV and digital standpoint, we start to transition our TV spot to the refi program, and we would continue that through, April or May of the next year when the in-school program borrowers are starting to come in. So we make sure to pay a good attention. I would also say, in terms of tracking the borrower reads, in terms of there's a question on our application with Campus Door, how did you hear about Cheslaw? Essentially 96% of the refi applicants indicated they heard about Cheslaw through one of our marketing sources, TV, digital, radio, or social media, which, I think that makes sense because at that point, a recent grad is not dealing too much with the school. The bulk of our refi volume is coming from that marketing budget.
You're not going to be on TV with refi until what, September or October?
Like October or November. I mean, we still do social media posts to augment that. But, from now through to September, the primary focus with our TV spot is the in-school program and students looking for funding for the fall.
Thank you.
So page 31 now, we have the state residence data of the refi borrowers. Based on our criteria, most of the refi CT borrowers are Connecticut residents, because if you recall, you have to be a Connecticut resident, or if you're not a state resident, you have to be refinancing a prior Cheslaw loan. And you'll see all the town information here. Of those towns where the disbursement volume was greater than 100,000. Moving forward to page 32, you will note that the 15-year repayment term is the most popular repayment term selected. The 10-year term is trailing close behind. In terms of the loans being refinanced, status quo at the top, federal loans are number one, and then Sally Mae and Cheslaw loans. The refi portfolio, 69% do not have a cosigner because again, this is geared towards, the young professional or any professional that's independent and looking to better their financial situation. And then lastly, in comparing the underlying loans of the refi CT borrowers compared to their refi CT rate. Refi CT borrowers are reducing their interest rate by about 2%.
Can you give me an estimate of what the rates are on the 15, 10, and 5-year refi loans?
I don't have the rate ranges by repayment term, but the rates range from 4.75, which would be the lowest for a 5-year, to 6.9, which is the high end of a 15-year.
So the wide variety then of rates.
Right. And also, those are FICO score driven, so there's a range depending on what your FICO score is as well.
I mean, if you would like further information after the board meeting, I'd be happy to send an email out with the exact ranges by repayment term.
I would be interested in that, because to save 2%. 1.99%, either there are a lot of very expensive loans out there that are getting refinanced, or very few with low FICO scores that are using the facility. So,
I will certainly email that out after the meeting. I would also say I can see all the underlying loans being refinanced, and the number of loans that are in the 9%, 10%, 12% range is pretty astounding.
What were those? Were those from banks, private banks?
For-profit banks. Obviously, Sallie Mae is one of the top ones of the loans we're refinancing. But Sallie Mae, Discover, any of the for-profits. You do unfortunately see some high rates.
Interesting. Thank you.
Marty, this is for the record, this is Tim Webb with Hilltop. Plus loan rates going back a number of years prior to the Federal Direct Plus could have had 12% rates, 10% rates, 11% rates, and down to 8.5%. So it's reasonable to presume that if you had a plus loan borrower, they could be picking up that 2% by going from an 8.5% or a 12% loan to the Chesla product.
Thanks, sir. Very helpful.
Tim raises a good point there. Obviously, the number one loans we're refinancing are federal loans. We don't have that broken down. But as Tim alluded to, the large bulk of those would seem to be plus loans.
Well, it'll be interesting to see the month-to-month cash flow. The reason we're spending a little bit of time is because we show originations and the refi are slow, and they shouldn't be. With the numbers that we've just been talking about, there should be a big market out there for the refi loan.
I mean, just keep in mind that the federal loans have a 0% rate through September due to the pandemic. So, for the most part, it's not advantageous for a borrower to refinance any federal loans now. But you're right regarding a private bank or a for-profit bank.
Thanks a lot.
No problem. Okay, so moving on, page 33, we have the strategic plan dashboard. I just want to touch on the marketing highlights here. So we have a Fox 61 spot currently running that's geared towards our in-school program and in-school product, and that's featuring the Chesla staff. Financial Aid Basics recorded presentation, as we alluded to in the strategic plan. Natalia and Shannon had put together a great presentation regarding paying for college that was impacted due to the pandemic. we pivoted quickly and provided a recorded presentation for distribution with the Department of Education. And going off of that, Natalia and Shannon will provide some more detailed information on their outreach program later. We also provided a flyer and information sheet regarding our certificate program scholarship to the state workforce boards. The certificate scholarship application opens on July 1st. So we felt like it was an important avenue to access. I would also like to acknowledge the efforts of Betty Weintraub from CHIFA. She was the primary contact and helped coordinate the marketing effort with the workforce board. So kudos to Betty there. And then lastly, we participated in a Fox 61 virtual student news award ceremony. That's part of our sponsorship package. That the student news awards are where middle schools and high schools throughout the state can have their students produce their own news stories and submit those to Fox 61. A winner is then selected by category. We were fortunate enough to present the Cheswell Education Award, which came with a $1,000 scholarship for the team of recipients. I believe there was two winners, so basically $500 each. Moving forward,
Josh, at the bottom. Josh, it's still on page 33. What was responsible for the great slope downward of average speed to answer, call abandon rate, written correspondence proceeding? Is that just a result of the change?
So I was absolutely a good point. I was just going to touch on that. So I think for UAS as a servicer, I think where you see the average speed to answer was higher than the standard. I think that's all tied due to the pandemic. The pandemic, it took some time for them to acclimate and get all their employees working remotely. So I think that's the impact in April. And then you will see in May, once they were able to get all their employees up working remotely, you will see that they then reached the standard set forth in our contract.
Thanks.
No problem. Moving forward to page 34, we have some report information here regarding campus door. Page 34 here, this is specific to Cheswell and specific to Cheswell's in-school loan program. So you will note that through quarter three here, campus doors average speed to answer was at 36 seconds for the quarter, well below the 60 second standard. And the call abandon rate stood at 1.8%, which was below the 5% standard set forth in the contract. And then, I won't get into detail here, but there's some nice information to see the number of calls by day. And the average speed of answer distribution amongst the number of seconds and when primarily the people are calling in to campus door. Moving on to page 35, similar campus door information, Cheswell specific, and this is geared towards the refi program. The average speed of answer came in at 48 seconds, below the standard of 60. And the call abandon rate came at 1.1%, which is very low, and well below the standard set forth. So I'm sure you're probably sick of me talking. I believe that's the end of my portfolio update. And next on the agenda, is Shannon with her website analytics.
Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to start at slides 37. We're going to review CT dollars and cents first. So obviously the goal is to increase awareness for CT dollars and cents and the resources offered on the website for students and families. This data goes from July 2019 to March 2020 with the previous year comparison. And so what you see in this image here is we saw an increase in last year in number of sessions per user. An average session time compared to previous year. Sessions are defined as a group of interactions or engagements taken by the user when they are on the website for each visit. The increase of number of sessions and session times by users just means that they're returning and they're spending more time on the site. We also saw an increase in the average number of pages viewed during the session, which just means that they're interacting way more on the site, visiting multiple tabs and multiple sections of the website. A decreased bounce rate of over 75% from last year shows there's more time being spent on the site again. And then just to kind of explain what bounce rate is, it's a percentage of visitors that come to the site who navigate away from the site basically immediately. They don't interact on the site and it's a session time of 0 seconds. So they come on and they hop immediately off. And that's kind of how they calculate the bounce rate. Any questions on this slide? Next is 38. This is also CT dollars and cents. So from July 2019 to March 2020, we saw a shift in the age demographics visiting the website. We saw an increase in age groups of 18 to 24 and 25 to 34, meaning that we have more students. We have more young adults that are looking on the site, which is a good thing. We also saw an over 5% increase in male users, which is kind of surprising. Usually it's female geared when it comes to CT dollars and cents. So I don't know if anybody's been asked, I'm going to tell you anyway. Google can determine a user's gender and age when the user provides their name to a Google account. Most people have Google accounts or any Google partner. So some website referrals, so where the traffic is coming from, is Chesla, Chet, the CT Office of Higher Education, Google, which just means they're searching and they find us that way, Facebook, Chifa, LinkedIn, and actually Wallingford Schools and Montville Schools. Any questions on this? Okay. So, slide 39, this is Chesla. So, for Chesla, obviously, we'll continue to build awareness and continue to increase in loan volume. And hold on. So for this slide specifically, from July 2019 to March 2020, we saw an increase in users compared to last year. Specifically an increase from last year in new users, which means we have new people that are coming onto the site for the first time. Again, the sessions are the interactions that they take on the site. And then we also saw an increase in page views. This means that users are spending more time on the website and they're going to different pages. We have an in-school page, a refi page. We just added the scholarship page, obviously, when we opened it up last year. And then we have an outreach page as well now. Okay, so slide 40. So slide 40, we have shows you kind of, we've seen it consistently. A majority of our traffic comes from organic search sources, meaning that someone's searching for us, either Google or some type of search engine, and then it goes direct to the site. And that could be attributed to multiple marketing efforts, like Josh talked about earlier. With the diversifying of marketing that we've done, we saw that the change came from in a website traffic. So I know it's kind of small, at least on my screen it is, but if you see the other, you saw an additional increase of that, and that is specific to Fox News and NBC, as well as an increase in social media. So this is all kind of quantifying what Josh was talking about earlier with the metrics of where we see our traffic and our loans come from. This is a consolidation of all the marketing efforts together, but we've seen a kind of increase in our digital our social media and our work with Fox News and NBC. Questions? Okay. So also, additional referrals came from, there's a long list because there's a lot, Facebook, Elm Select, collegescholarships.org, finaid.org, University of Hartford, CT Dollars and Cents, CT, Office of Higher Education, Google, again, that's a search engine. You can just search CHESLA or student loans and it can come up. University of St. Joseph, Bridgeport University, CHIFA, University of Pennsylvania, NYU, Georgetown, collegefair.com, for you, not for profit, Vermont Tech, Rensselaer, Xfinity, AETV, and history.com. And that's kind of, there's more, but it's like 0.0%. So it might be like one reference there at that point. Does anybody have any questions? Okay, smooth sailing. And just so to caveat, data can be pulled via your IP address and emails. So, and also every site you visit online can track your time spent there and leaves what are called cookies on your computer. That's kind of a brief summary of how we kind of consolidate all the Google Analytics to make you pretty.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to go to slide 41, I think, right? Just going to get a brief overview of this. Natalia, hold on. I was going to introduce you.
Oh, okay.
Natalia is going to go over our CHESLA outreach and how we kind of expanded to going virtual.
Okay, thank you. Hi, everyone. So slide 41, after we had to cancel all of our planned financial aid basics presentations, we decided to create a virtual presentation. So it ended up being about 20 minutes long, and it's posted on our YouTube page, and then the Department of Education also provided it to every high school in the state. And then moving on to slide 43, like we discussed during our last board meeting, Shannon and I hosted our first presentation at Litchfield High School on March 19th and 20th. We had 70 seniors in attendance along with their guidance counselors. And at the end, we held a survey for all the participants, and I included the results of that survey. So you can see that the majority of students both enjoyed and learned from it. And then I also included their favorite parts of the presentation. Does anyone have any questions? Great, thank you.
I think after that we had some stats as well. We can see.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Otherwise, if the next agenda item, did you want to present the stats or?
No, that's okay.
That's the outcome of the survey.
Yep.
I think the quarterly financial report is next.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. This is Carly Levin. I'm going to start on to 50 of the board packet or the slide presentation. For the 9 months ending March 31st, 2020, revenues over expenses before non-operating income and expenses were $238,201. And revenues over expenses after non-operating income and expenses were $231,321. Total year-to-date revenues were $16,673 under budget. And total year-to-date expenses were $155,214 under budget. And that's primarily due to the Chief of Support Staff Services being under budget. there's no questions regarding the agency, we can move on to page 55. And that's going to go over the bond resolution. The total change in that position for the 1990 resolution before transfers was an increase of $1,247,000, and total change in that position after the transfer is an increase of $1,253,000. The total change in that position for the 2019 resolution before the transfer is a decrease of $308,326, and total change in that position after the transfer is a decrease of $318,363. This is due primarily to the allowance for loan loss increased for this quarter by $308,000 and to the pending reconciliation of origination fees of $364,000. The origination fees are the 3% of the distributed in-school student loans. We've been working closely with UAS regarding the reporting and the origination fees, which has now been reconciled and has been reported. So that is all set at this point. Are there any questions?
I have a question. I have a question about the 2019 resolution. Is both the refi taxable series and the in-school loan loans, is that all merged together so cash flow from in-school loans can go to pay off requirements under the series for refi? Or how does that resolution work?
I believe
I'll answer that. Carly, can I answer that?
Absolutely.
It's Judith Blank from Day Pitney. So the answer, Marty, is that the money is tracked separately so that we can track compliance with the tax requirements in connection with the tax-exempt debt, but it is parity debt, so that should money from the refi program be, or should loan payments from the refi program be needed, they would be available. But we don't anticipate that that would ever happen.
Right. So you track it for tax code compliance questions, but in fact, the money is equally usable, but you can't use too much of it or else you're in trouble.
Correct. Correct. And each has a scarf. So, we don't anticipate.
Each series has a separate scarf.
Correct.
Okay, and how many series are there? Just two, is that correct?
Well, there's a third one that was issued this spring.
That was for in-school loans.
Correct.
Right. Correct. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Judith. Were there any other questions regarding the two resolutions? Okay. I'm going to move on to page 58 of your packet, and I'll touch on the other programs that CHESLA has. So regarding our scholarship funds, the net position for this quarter was an increase of $3,444. Total change in that position for the non-bond refi program before transfers was an increase of $18,208, and the total change in that position after the transfer was an increase of $21,144. The total change in that position for the 2018 non-trust fund before transfers was an increase of $85, and total change in that position after the transfer was no change to the prior quarter. I have one other item I wanted to mention. Actually, is there any questions regarding the other programs? The other item I wanted to mention were the write-offs. So we do write-offs at the end of every May, and any accounts that have no payment activity on or before May 31st, 2019, we notify the collection agency to move those accounts from performing to a write-off status. So the amount of student write-off for this fiscal year is going to be $498,000, which is higher than last year's write-off of $306,000. We have recovered for this fiscal through May 31st, $117,000 this year, which is higher than last year's recoveries of $80,000. Any questions regarding write-off for recovery? That's all I have then.
All right, thank you, Carly. I think next is Tim, you going to do a post-sale report?
Sure. For the record, this is Tim Webb, Director and Student Loan Group for Hilltop Securities, and I'll report on the 2020 issuance. Needless to say, given the pandemic, the impact that COVID has had around the country, it did have an impact on the ability of people to access the tax-exempt and taxable market, at least in the early portion of the spring. Things were moving along quite well early in the year. We were at historic lows. Everybody was anticipating very attractive rates moving towards the date when we would issue student loan revenue bonds. With COVID hitting, that changed everything. We saw a major disruption in the market. The ability to issue tax-exempt bonds essentially disappeared. People did come in with dribs and drabs, primarily very high-quality, high-rated issues with a lot of liquidity. But for the majority of the market, things went completely stagnant. There was no issuance. We continue to work behind the scenes, hoping that the market would come into its own later on into the spring. So the working group consisting of Chesla and staff, Hilltop and Bank of America and Bond Counsel, Judith, we worked to put together a transaction. The transaction consists of three issues out of two different trusts. The 2020 Series B bonds were issued in an amount of $19 million out of the 2019 trust as additional bonds. That provides about $18 million of loanable proceeds for the in-school loan program. And I think that the staff, and we are happy to let you know that the loan rate on those new in-school loans are at a 4.85, which I think is lower than anything that you've been able to do in the past. So that was a benefit. With regard to the other two transactions, these were two refunding issues that were issued out of the 1990 indenture, and these were done specifically to provide debt service savings with relation to the older debt. We were refunding the 2009 Series A and the 2010 Series A. At this point, I might turn it over to Judith to give you a quick primer on the refunding of those two issues.
Thank you, Tim. Again, it's Judith Lang from Dave Pitney. The refundings had to be done as separate series due to the requirements of the tax code. Back in December of 2017, the advance refundings on a tax-exempt basis were eliminated. So the 2009 bonds were eligible for redemption at any time. So we closed on those in mid-June, and that redemption will occur in mid-July. The 2010 bonds that were refunded are not eligible to be redeemed until November 15, 2020 of this year. So they cannot close until August of 2020. So we had a forward purchase agreement, and those are scheduled to close in August.
So, as shown on the slide, I'm sorry, Marty.
No, I was just going to say it added to the equity of roughly $1.8 million. I take it there was already significant equity in the 1990 indenture.
Yeah, I think There is. I think if based on Carly's numbers, roughly 21 million of excess parity exists in that trust right now.
Thank you.
You can see the savings by trust or by issue. So the refunding bonds, the 2020 Series C refunded 2009A, produced net present value savings of roughly 800,000. And on the Series D case, refunding the 2010, we'll see savings of roughly $1,010,000. So I think that was a good benefit for the authority to do those two issues. We sold these bonds on June 3rd. Again, this was a difficult market, although the market did start coming back in the mid portion of June. We were kind of like the penguins on an ice floe, pushing one another off to try to find out whether or not there's the polar bear in the water. We were hoping that some other issuers did come to market before us, and that's the case. Both New Jersey and RISLA came to market with, in the case of New Jersey, they priced roughly $250 million of all tax-exempt bonds for their in-school program and some refi. And RISLA had a combined taxable and tax-exempt issue. But they were able to come on the 20th and 21st of May, which provided us with a little bit of price discovery, as well as the state of Connecticut came with an issue. Part of why, you know, normally we price these bonds on or about the date that the plus loan rate is reset each year to eliminate some basis risk with regard to your loan rate. The plus rate was set on the 12th of May. The 10-year treasury was auctioned at that point at 70 basis points, a very, very low rate, so that the plus rate moving forward was at 530, will be a 530 for fiscal year or academic year 2021. So the goal was to be able to come in with an interest rate on the in-school product for CHESLA that would be below that 530, and we were able to do so. It was very important for us to see the state come to market so we could draft off of the state, but probably more importantly is we needed confirmation from the rating agencies as to the state's rating, since CHESLA's bonds are backed by the SCARF, which is essentially an obligation or a moral obligation of the state relative to the SCARF. So, Joe, I don't know, Joe with Bank of America Securities is on the line. I think he may have some words to discuss with regard to the market and how we drafted off the state.
Sure. Thanks, Tim. Again, this is Joe Santor, Bank of America Securities, and head of the our education finance team. Again, thanks. We want to thank CHESLA for the opportunity to lead this transaction. As Tim mentioned, it was a very complex transaction. We issued out of the two trusts with both new money and refunding, AMT and non-AMT, and included a forward delivery. And all that would have been still fairly normal, except for the pandemic and market turmoil and uncertainty. You know, as Josh mentioned earlier, another thing to point out, adding the complexity here is the servicer change. So we're working with data that was, you know, new templates, new information had to be reconciled with prior data that we had for the previous transactions. So the as Tim mentioned, we did delay and wait. 10-year Treasury stayed about the same from the time it was in early May to the time we priced at 70 basis points. But in those couple weeks, the 10-year and the MMD started to come in on the tax-exempt side. We did have the benefit of, first, the STO, state tax deal obligation transaction coming on the 18th. That was an $850 million state-backed transaction at the A-plus level. And then, as Tim mentioned, a couple New Jersey and RISLA, a couple student loan transactions that came on the 20th and 21st. So that definitely helped with our price discovery. And then we posted our offering document on the 22nd, marketed for about a week and a half over the Memorial Day week. And we knew we had this window of time with the state coming with their taxable transactions right on the heels, and then a tax-exempt transaction in late June. So I think the timing really worked out quite well for CHESLA. We were able to, with the positive tone coming off the STO deal, as well as a very heavy oversubscription on the two student loan transactions, we were able to leverage off of that. We had a very wide range of investors come in here, from bond funds to SMAs to institutional, and even a small percent of retail investors have well oversubscribed. But then there were a couple of what we call more traditional student loan investors that didn't participate because, frankly, they said that they felt the deal was too tight, and we're very good with that. We're glad we were able to. We priced this fairly aggressively, and then because of the heavy oversubscription, we had over $225 million of orders in total. We were able to reduce yields really across the board and then deliver for CHESLA a transaction that was able, we were able to further lower the loan rate, as Tim mentioned, and, you know, it's a 4.85%. And then also because of the better pricing than expected, delivered the better than expected savings on both the refunding and the forward. And again, the forward was probably one of the first forwards to be done post-pandemic. So I'm proud that we were able to get that done as well and achieve the goals of CHESLA. Any questions?
I just wanted to acknowledge the great work done by Bank of America and Hilltop under difficult market conditions, and the 4.85 loan rate, we believe, is the lowest in CHESLA history, so we're very pleased with the results.
This is Tim Webb again for the record. I want to just point out a couple of additional pieces of information. Obviously, there was turmoil in markets. We were able to get a deal structured, get them priced well, and provide a nice loan rate for the in-school program. But there are other concerns when you're running these programs, and that has to do with the cash flows. A lot of uncertainty with regard to how students are going to react to COVID in the fall. Who will be in college? What is the loan demand? So wanted the board to understand that we spend a great deal of time working with the underwriters, bond counsel, and with CHESLA staff to come up with cash flow assumptions that took as much as we possibly could into account the uncertainty that will exist with regard to people going to school in the fall and then again in the winter time for their first and second disbursements. So in past years, and as you saw it on Josh's dashboard, we had $24 to $25 million worth of originations. So after working with Josh and Jeanette, the cash flows reflect a $6 million drop in that. So the reason that we have a $19 million issuance is that we were looking for about $18 million worth of proceeds to be used. So we anticipate, or the cash flows anticipate, that there'll be less demand as a result of COVID. We also added some additional stresses with regard to non-payment in the form of deferment of the loans, increased the deferment so that we could put some stress on the cash flows from a liquidity perspective to make sure that there were no draws on the SCARF. So those all were calculated into the cash flows. Let's see. The PowerPoint presentation that I put is very, very short. The next slide in the deck just provides you a little bit of a closer look at the refunding bonds and the savings thereon. And then later in the PowerPoint, there's a direct comparison of the rates that were achieved during the sale of the CHESLA bonds versus RISLA, New Jersey, and Vermont. I will note that there was another not-for-profit issuer. It was a state agency, Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, sold bonds on the 9th of June, I believe it was, but they were sold on a competitive basis, about $165 million worth of bonds. And they have the benefit of a GO back from the state of Texas in a rated AAA. So I didn't include that in your comps because they're really not a comparable. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
You know, it would be helpful if we could get these bond presentation in our packages in advance. I don't know when they're available to Josh. I mean, I think it's great that on Go to My Meeting we can put them up here. Is it possible, remember, next year when we do another bond issue to try and get the bond package of slides out early?
Absolutely, Marty. That is my fault. I will make sure that they're available to go into the packet.
And it looks like the coupons, the average coupon, certainly on Series C, to get a 5% tax exempt. I don't know what the average life was. So it was only 4 years. That really is quite a return. Unfortunately, I don't think we're allowed to invest in Tesla bonds as members of the board, but that looked like a very rich investment.
Well, I think if the presentation can move to the second slide. Oh, there it is. It's up there. You can see what the yield was on those bonds. So those people were getting a 5% coupon, but they were paying quite a high premium.
I see.
So you're looking at a tick there of a 184. The coupon was 5.
Right. But they were short. Their average life of 4 years.
They are short. That's correct.
Thank you.
Now, part of the refunding, Marty, is we were not looking to extend the maturity in any way, shape, or form past the original maturity of the refunded bonds.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Tim. Anything else for Tim? Nothing? Okay. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Josh, you and Shannon going to give us a quick scholarship update? Josh, is it going to be you and Shannon?
Am I starting this, Josh?
Okay. Maybe he's having some technical difficulties, so why don't you start?
Yes, Shannon, why don't you go ahead?
Okay, sure. So slide 62, just going to give you an overview of the qualified applicants who received. And then we'll go into the recipients. So I'm sorry, slide 63. Sorry, Deb. So if you look at that slide, you'll see that we had 318 applications that qualified. This is the applicants that completed the application that Natalia Rosio kind of put together in the Fondit system. And everything was put together. They weren't missing documentation, anything like that, okay? So if you go through the percentages, you'll see full-time versus part-time. Majority of our applicants were going full-time. We split out community college versus four-year institution. 5% were going to community college, 95% were going to a four-year institution. We had a variety in regards to grade level. So we had 47% freshmen, 17% juniors, 10% seniors, and 26% sophomore. Gender, female makes up 78%, male makes up 18%, and then 4% was not mentioned. And then this year we included age groups because we thought it would be interesting. We had a variety of different age groups last year. So, for baby boomers, 55 to 75, we had one, so they didn't really make up that large percent. And then Generation X, which is 40 to 54 years old. We had 7, so that makes up 3%. Generation Y are millennials, 29 people, and then 9%. And then Generation Z, obviously, which is the people that 4 to 24, we had 281. We make up. Anybody have any questions on that? Okay. So then we're going to go to slide 64. And that breaks out the colleges. So out of the 318 qualified applicants, 26 institutions were represented, and 78 Connecticut cities and towns were represented. And, if you can see all 26 colleges, but the top five, the Sacred Heart, University of Connecticut, University of Hartford, and then Eastern, and then the towns, Bridgeport, Stamford, Hartford, New Haven, Milford, were the top five.
Now, these were scholarship monies that were put out throughout this fiscal year. I understand we have $500,000 for next fiscal year. When do the scholarship applications go out for next year?
Marty, this is Josh. These are applicants in which we would be dispersing the funds in the next fiscal year. So the application always starts in March, would close at the end of May, but then the awards are made in the following fiscal year.
So $500,000, it's allocated. This is how the $500,000 is going to be used.
Well, we're proposing $487,500. Keep in mind that the $500,000 is broken up between $450,000 for undergraduate students or undergraduate degree granting students, and $50,000 for those pursuing a certificate. So the board at the January meeting had approved an allocation of $450,000 for students pursuing an undergraduate degree. We're proposing to award $487,500 because the scholarship account has about $84,000 in unused proceeds from schools over the years, but also earned interest in the account.
You want a resolution authorize the 487 in light of what the resolution was in January? I'm happy to make that resolution authorizing an increase using funds that we have on hand. There is that.
Jeanette, do we need that? We probably do need that, don't we, Jeanette?
Yeah, I think it'd be good to have that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Murray. Are you moving that?
Yes.
Is there a second?
Second.
I'll second.
Second.
Okay. Is there further discussion? All right. Hearing none, all those in favor of making the funds available, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Is there any abstentions? All right. Well, thank you, Martin.
I had one more question.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Deb, real quick. I did not get the second on that. Could you please tell me who that was?
I did. Peter did.
Did too.
Okay.
One of us did at the same time.
Is there any report on the $50,000 that was supposed to be used for certificate programs?
Marty, that certificate program application opens July 1st, and that'll be available on a first-come, first-served basis. Any applicant that meets the ESC criteria of 6,000 or less and provides a letter of recommendation would be provided a scholarship of $1,250 until the funds run out. So that $50,000 is still yet to be allocated.
So you'll give us a report in September about that program.
Yeah, we can give you an update. I mean, we'd have no way of knowing if all 50,000 would be out or not, but we can right. certainly give you a sense right. of it.
Good. Thank you.
No problem.
Okay, I think we can go on to 65, which just shows the same exact information, but just for the recipients. And since we've already kind of confirmed
yeah. And Shannon, just in the interest of time, I think we may need to move to the next agenda item, which is the, I don't know, Peter, did you want to go on to the Audit Finance Committee report, or did you want to continue to go through the data?
Yeah, I don't need to go in through the individuals. If you don't want, we can rush through that.
So it's your choice, Peter. I guess we can't hear Peter. Okay, why don't you quickly go through?
Yeah, this is Josh. I apologize. I had issues earlier too. I got booted off my phone. That's why I was delayed coming back in.
Do you want me to just do the totals of how many recipients?
Just do the totals.
Okay, so as we just agreed, it's $487,500, and there are 167 scholarship recipients that represent 23 institutions and 64 Connecticut city and towns.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, Peter, are you back on?
Yes. Yeah.
Off to the Audit Finance Committee report.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Jeanette, I'm sorry, you were breaking up. I didn't hear that.
The next item, we're up to the Audit Finance Committee report.
Right. Steve, do you want to give a recap and on our actions?
All right. Prior to this call, the Audit and Finance Committee met to review the proposed budget for fiscal 21. Just to refresh everyone's memory, that committee consists of Peter, Julie, and I. We went through the budget and listened to the presentation from staff. For the most part, it's a standard budget as we have every year with the natural increases in different areas. However, there are three places where we do have some changes that probably should be highlighted and discussed. One is in the compensation area as a result of a compensation study that was conducted and the implementation of the results of that. We also have under just to highlight, Chief of Support Services going into the new fiscal year will be charged at a much lower figure. I think Carly highlighted how much lower they were for the current fiscal year in her report, and that's a result of improved tracking of the actual time spent. And then there is also an item under consultants for an economic impact study. These are the things that are not standard to the budget in each year. And I'll turn it over to Jeanette to fill in the more details.
So sure, with regard to the compensation line in the budget, it does include a market adjustment for a staff member, and the compensation structure is being tracked off of a new structure which is being put in place organization-wide, meaning for CHIFA and all of its subsidiaries. And so CHIFA engaged a compensation consultant who in database statistics that were regionally sliced to focus on the greater Hartford area and to use that information in conjunction with feedback from management with regard to people's roles and responsibilities. They constructed salary grades for all staff within both CHIFA and CHESLA and created a minimum and a maximum for each salary grade. And part of the goal of this, and including both organizations is that we want to achieve, you know, make sure we have internal equity amongst all of the staff. And so the result of that is, you know, with the minimum and a maximum, the result is that every staff member for Chifa and Chesla should at least be at the minimum of their salary grade. And so there was one staff member through both organizations who was below that, and it happens to be a Chesla staff member. And so included in the Chesla budget is bringing that person up to the minimum. And so that is not part of the merit increase pool, which is also tracking off of what Chifa has approved, and that is to first of all not have any merit increases take effect until January 1 of 2021, and that's an acknowledgement of you know, general economic circumstances. And the merit increase pool would be not to exceed pool of 2.2% of current salaries. It would not, there's no retroactivity involved. In other words, on January 1, you're only getting 6 months worth of whatever your merit increase might be. And, you know, the merit increases are, you know, individually awarded based on performance. So that is the explanation of why there is such a significant increase on the compensation line in the budget.
Jeanette, on page 74, where it has compensation for 3 or 4 years, the ups and downs are amazing. It says for fiscal year June 30, 2019, it was $235,000. Then for fiscal year 2018, it was only $98,000. I don't know if somebody can talk about.
Well, I think what you're seeing there, because we are including budget and actual for each year, and what you're seeing there is the impact of there was an individual out on medical leave during part of that time, in which case, you know, their salary was funded by disability insurance. So you know, some of that is what you're seeing in that fluctuation in the comparison of actual and budget.
Thank you.
And then also, you know, we've added some staff as well over the years.
Thank you.
Okay. With regard to the support services, we have just, you know, going back to the very beginning, support services were calculated based on kind of a sampling and an estimate. So when Chesla early on became a subsidiary, we did like a 1 month time study of who's spending how much time providing accounting, legal, or other services to Chesla. And then we sort of rolled that estimate forward for a number of years. And so, you know, so one of what that did in effect was some of the larger amounts of time, because people were getting up the learning curve in terms of what Chesla does and what it is, got a little bit baked into some of the past historical support services numbers. And what we've done in the past year, now we have a system in place where people are actually tracking and entering their exact time on a weekly basis of how much time they're doing Chesla activities, and that's allowing us to come to derive a more accurate number for support services. So that's, and also, you know, people's time is reduced because, you know, they're up the learning curve, and so that contributes to it as well. So that's why the support services fees are reduced. And then with regard to the economic impact study, you know, we put $20,000 in as a consultant for an economic impact study. You know, that number is somewhat of a placeholder, but again, we were tracking off of an approach that we used on the Chifa side. Economic impact studies, you know, it would be historical with like a 3 to 5 year look back. And, you know, it's something that we would use as a tool to help educate legislators on what CHESLA does and the impact that it has on the state of Connecticut. And it's just, you know, something we can use to assist us in making the case with that group, but also more broadly, it's information that we can put out to the general public in terms of, you know, helping to build awareness, posting it on our website, things like that. So I think those are the
Jeanette, with respect to the consultant on the impact of CHESLA economic impact, I assume that's over the last 30 years. I don't know. As I previously mentioned to you, I hope you will come to the board, both with respect to the RFP for who the consultant is, and also what kinds of impacts they're likely to look at. I think there's experience on the board here that is likely to be very helpful to any consultant who's trying to figure out what the impact of CHESLA has been. A, whether you want to go just the last 10 years, last 30 years, and what kind of metrics ought to be used to measure that. So I think this is something that the board ought to be much involved in, especially if we're going to spend something like $20,000.
Right. So as I said, that was sort of a placeholder number. I would expect it to come in lower, but certainly, yes, we will keep the board involved and informed as we, you know, start researching what the options are from a consulting perspective.
It's conceivable to me that we may want to have a two or three subcommittee, of which I would not want to be part of, but we have our chair and vice chair who have significant experience in this area and might be very helpful in working with staff and trying to figure out what kind of metrics we ought to look at.
Yeah, I think as we get to the point of developing an RFP, you know, identifying potential options, I think then, you know, the responses to the RFP would include a clear work plan and proposal, and then from there we'd have something that could be the basis for discussion with the board.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Jeanette or Steve or myself with regard to the audit, finance, human relations meeting prior to this meeting?
I'll move acceptance of the budget as presented.
Okay, it is the just so everyone knows, it is the recommendation of the Audit Finance Committee to accept the budget as presented. So, Marty, if that's your motion, thank you. Is there a second?
This is Steve, I'll second.
Okay, so there's a motion and a second to accept the Audit Finance Committee's recommendation to accept the budget as presented. Are there any further questions, comments, concerns, anything with regard to the recommendation to accept the budget as presented? All right, hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Okay, thank you. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeanette, is there any other, there's other updates on the agenda. Do you have anything else you'd like to bring forward?
No, I don't.
Any other business that anyone would like to put forward? With that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll move.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you all very much for your time. I appreciate it. Enjoy the summer. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
Peter?
Yes.
What time do you want to have